If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and James Miles, very generous China editor for The Economist magazine, is here to help us understand in North America what it is that has happened to the Chinese Communist Party in the 100 years now that it celebrates its centennial. What has happened is that we've gone from the inspirational and strong-minded, bloody-minded Mao Zedong to the inspirational and strong-minded, perhaps bloody-minded Xi Jinping. And the changes in between are less significant right now than the pressing matter of what is Xi Jinping doing about his anxiety that the Chinese Communist Party, the Communist Party that rules 1.4 billion people, could go the way of the, not exactly dodo bird, but the Soviet Union, 1921. In particular, I learned from James that Xi fears the word glasnost. He believes glasnost was the beginning of the end, when you lose party discipline. So, in reestablishing party discipline, how is it done? I thought it was just about a bunch of surveillance cameras, the way London or New York are now living, with ability to recover incidents on the street or people misbehaving. However, no, it's being done by human beings. Human intelligence is what the security agencies tell us. James, I want to go immediately to surveillance. There are 92 million party members, and maybe that's too many, maybe it's not enough. But they're charged with, well, the old-fashioned word was informing. I'm sure they have a very clever way of putting it in Chinese, in China's Communist Party. But they're to keep watch on everything, and you give a wonderful example of a Chinese Communist Party member spotting scrap paper on the street and immediately reporting it, so it was removed. What is it that Xi Jinping wants to accomplish by turning 92 million people into busybodies?
Well, what he wants to do is to restore the kind of intrusive control, intense control that we had seen in place in China, really, through the 1980s, until the country really began economic reform in the cities in earnest. Because what accompanied those economic reforms, which really took off in 1992, 3 years after Tiananmen, was the collapse of the party at the grassroots. From a situation in the 1980s, during Tiananmen itself, when almost everybody, in one way or another, worked for the Chinese state, whether in state-owned enterprises, government institutions, universities, schools, hospitals, whatever it might be, they were almost all working for the government. There was almost no private enterprise to speak of. To a situation now where almost everybody is not working for the state. And what that has meant is that the role of party secretaries at the grassroots in workplaces, which previously had been almighty. These people had enormous control over people's everyday lives, and knowledge of that had helped to keep order in society. People knew that if they said something wrong, did something wrong, offended the party in some way, even if only in a relatively minor way, it could have a ripple effect that would haunt their lives, their careers, and, you know, for the rest of their lives. And Xi Jinping has been trying to reestablish some of that control by re-injecting the Communist Party into the workplace. In other words, into private businesses and any other institution that doesn't have direct government links. So also into NGOs, for example. And these Communist Party branches in private firms have two roles. One is to make sure that the companies themselves don't begin to acquire so much power and influence that they become sort of potential rivals to party power at the local level. And secondly, to keep a watch on employees and to make sure that they don't take to the streets. So to act as eyes and ears for the Communist Party. Now, of course, the party now still has less control and won't be able to regain it because, you know, there were crucial areas of power that these low-level party secretaries had in the past that can't be recovered. One really obvious one is the power to determine how many babies people have. China then had a one-child policy. It's now been relaxed to three, but most Chinese, urban Chinese, don't want even to have two babies these days. So that's not really much leverage over them. And the other main area of control was in terms of the allocation of housing. Well, that's mostly now been privatized. There was another two, and that was their ability to determine whether or not someone could travel abroad, whether they could get a passport. Well, these days, most urban Chinese who have enough money to travel abroad do have passports already. Of course, the Communist Party can stop them at will. But anyway, powers have been reduced. What Xi Jinping wants to do is to make sure that enough power is restored such that the party can readily take the pulse and intervene should anything go awry. And he's been putting huge effort into this.
Wondering how you recruit the future. I learn in James's reporting that it has been to join the Communist Party when you're young is like getting into an Oxford dining club. Now, I'm not entirely sure what that means, so James will help me understand it. It sounds elitist, and it sounds like it matters who your mother and father were. You remember, James, in the old days when you were interviewed for Eat, the only question you'd get is, and how is your father the Baron? So I wonder if something has happened here that has converted China into influence peddling at the family level, or whether it is a meritocracy like the Mandarin phase of China's history. How is it, James?
No, getting into the Communist Party is not a question of your family's wealth and power. It is much more a question of how loyal you are to the system and the lengths to which you are prepared to go to prove that. And the process of getting into the party involves, first of all, having two people already in it who are sponsors. That may be the easy bit. What follows is having to show over a fairly long period, and it can be a year or two, utter devotion to the party in the form of regular so-called thought reports, that is, writing down your thoughts about major political issues. And the idea is clearly to make sure that you're completely in line with the thinking of Xi Jinping and the Communist Party. Taking part in study sessions of the Communist classics, taking part in party activities, whatever they may be. We've seen over the past a year or more, of course, huge numbers of not only party members, but wannabe party members joining the front lines of the response to the pandemic in China. In other words, they're the people who go and enforce quarantines in neighborhoods where cases have been discovered, help deliver food to people if they're stuck at home because of pandemic measures and so on. So it's a long period of having to show that you'll do pretty well anything for the party, that you know all the right phrases, are able to recite the key lines from Xi Jinping thought. And then once you're in, you are a member in effect of a secret society. You do have to swear an oath, not only of loyalty to the party, but to uphold its secrets. Secrecy is still a central feature of the way that the Communist Party operates. And in that sense, it still has much in common with the way it was back in 1921 when it was founded.
A puzzler. And we'll move on to what the future looks like for Xi Jinping and how China is conducting its business around the world. But a puzzler, is the quotation from Mao as significant as a quotation from Xi Jinping's thoughts? How do they balance that? If you have memorized Mao, are you to use Xi first?
I think you would have to memorize them all. The question is, which is actually more important when it comes to getting stuff done? Everybody can quote from Mao or Marx, but the core philosophies that those two systems of thought represent, those of Marx and Mao, are now inapplicable in China. China is not a Marxist country, nor is it a Maoist one. It is practicing a kind of ruthless capitalism that favors, by and large, an urban elite that is relatively well off. And yes, measures are, you know, steps are taken to alleviate poverty and everything else. But ultimately, the most important class, as far as the party is concerned, is not the proletariat or farmers in the countryside, but urban middle-class people who, if dissatisfied, could present the biggest threat. And that's why the most attention is paid to them.
James Miles is the China editor of The Economist magazine, special section at the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party. It has changed with the ages. When we come back, what does the future look like to Xi Jinping, who has concentrated military and political power in himself, and he will not live forever? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.